This day, December 6, 2017, marks the 100th anniversary of the Halifax explosion. Historian John Bacon has written a new book, The Great Halifax Explosion, a World War I story of treachery, tragedy, and extraordinary heroism, which is being hailed as the definitive book on the tragedy, bringing to light one of the most dramatic events of the 20th century. In the book, Bacon offers a narrative nonfiction account of the world's first weapon of mass destruction that explores the political, military, and human interest dimensions of the event and its lasting impact. Again, the name of the book is The Great Halifax Explosion, and it's a great pleasure to welcome John Bacon to the roundtable this morning. John, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe.
Very nice to have you on the program. Besides the 100th anniversary, what led you to this story and wanting to explore it?
Dumb luck, Joe, for the most part. My grandfather, born and raised in New Brunswick, Canada, not too far from you guys, he told me about this when I was a kid. Now, he was 12 years old in 1917 when this happens, the biggest man-made explosion until Hiroshima. But I'd never heard it anywhere else. I didn't quite place it when he kept on telling me these stories about an anchor flying 3 miles one way and a cannon flying 4 miles the other way, which is pretty crazy. Until I started researching my first book on the University of Michigan hockey team, it turns out one of the first responders was Michigan's first hockey coach. And since I came across that and did some homework, I realized my grandfather was right. So I've always been thinking about doing this book for about 15 years and finally got my chance.
Give us some of the ingredients that led up to that day that allowed this to happen, this account of the first weapon of mass destruction, really.
It's pretty amazing. Now, of course, World War I is the backdrop. This is 100 years ago to the day, pretty much. So after the Russians drop out of World War I, the Allied forces, which is Great Britain, France, and the U.S. at that time, are terrified that without an Eastern Front to occupy Germany, they're going to blow through the Western Front. So they kind of overdid it with this ship called the Mont Blanc, which loaded in Gravesend Bay, New York, near obviously Brooklyn, with 6 million pounds of TNT and other high explosives. That's 13 times the weight of the Statue of Liberty. So these guys were not messing around. Probably not a very good idea either. The ship goes up to Halifax on its way to France to bomb the Germans, basically. While in Halifax, it is dying to get in the harbor and safe from German U-boats, the submarines. Another ship called the Emo from Norway is dying to get out. It is also late, and it's trying to get to New York to load up with relief supplies to go back to Europe also. So the Emo starts breaking all kinds of conventions by continually passing ships on the left, which is kind of the same as passing cars on the left. On a two-lane road, you can do that once in a while, but if you keep doing it, sooner or later, you're going to see a car in your lane.
Right.
And the car in this case was Mont Blanc, which could not believe what Emo was doing. Emo had no idea what Mont Blanc had on it. And finally, at the last second of this game of chicken, Mont Blanc figures, okay, this guy's crazy. So it pivots to the left to avoid the game of chicken. And at the same moment, Emo also does the same thing. That knocks over the barrels of airplane fuel on top of the bow of Mont Blanc, which sets the fire going. The crew takes off for the woods on rowboats. The ship, now a ghost ship, slides perfectly into Pier 6 at the base of Halifax, and 18 minutes later it blows up with about, you know, a few thousand people watching it. And when that happens, you got 25,000 homeless, you've got 9,000 wounded, and you've got 2,000 dead in an instant.
Yes, 2,000 dead. This is one of the bloodiest man-made disasters in world history. And it seems in reading the book that it could have even been worse, right?
It could have been much worse were it not for, we've told you the bad news, Joe. The good news is the incredible response about people in Halifax, people across Canada, and people in the U.S., especially Boston and also New York. The response was overwhelmingly helpful. Strangers with strangers, ordinary people becoming extraordinary heroes, left and right, sacrificing themselves in many cases, certainly selflessly, with each other. And Boston, within 1 hour, sends, without even being asked, decides to send two ships, two trains, 100 doctors, 300 nurses, and $1 million of supplies, all within about a day and a half. And that helps save Halifax, and Halifax never forgot it. And that is why on Thursday night, Boston will once again receive a Christmas tree from Halifax, which cost Halifax around $180,000 to send it. And that's a thanks from 100 years ago for saving Halifax.
One of the things that is so incredible about this story is how shockingly quick and devastating that explosion was. So at 9:04 and 35 seconds, you report that it's 1/15th of a second, a blink, less than a blink, that basically makes these 25,000 people homeless, wounds 9,000, and kills 2,000.
That's exactly right. 1/15th of a second, which is 5 times faster than it takes to blink. So this is how incredibly quick this whole thing happens. And in that split second, truly, the temperature of the ship skyrockets to 9,000 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 6 times hotter than molten lava. And it also fires out in all directions, up, down, left, right, center, you name it, at the same time at 3,400 miles per hour, which is 4 times the speed of sound. So this thing is 1/5 the power of the atomic bomb, and the guy who did those calculations was none other than J. Robert Oppenheimer, the architect, of course, of the A-bomb, who held a conference in 1942 to study Halifax as the only model they had at the time of what might happen in Hiroshima. So this is 1/5 the power of the A-bomb, and as you point out, it happens in a split second.
And even though Halifax is completely unprepared for the disaster, these heroes come out of the woodwork. They surface everywhere, and within hours, they are forming committees. They are amazingly effective in helping their fellow man.
Exactly right. And by the way, I hope your listeners appreciate Joe. Joe really does read the doggone book. So, Joe, well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I can tell pretty quickly in these things. So, very well done. Yeah, the city of Halifax was utterly unprepared for anything like this, where Boston was prepared. So when this happens, the mayor is out of town in Halifax. The deputy mayor, who runs a clothing store, he's not a politician by trade, he's a local businessman, he literally is knocked on his backside by the powerful blast 2 miles away from the site. That's how powerful this thing is. They wipes out Halifax about 2.5 square miles. Incredible. So while he's on his backside, he realizes that the mayor is out of town. He is now in charge. So with zero experience, with not much credibility, frankly, he holds an emergency meeting at the town hall, which has all its windows blown out, again, 2 miles away or so. And within 45 minutes, they put together 12 committees. They put all their egos aside. They got rid of all the red tape. They got down to business very, very quickly. And as one wag said, they accomplished more in 45 minutes than they had all year to that point. So they got out of their own way and were amazingly effective. But so were the average people, again, pulling strangers out of burning buildings left and right. They were also incredible, and the generosity was amazing. So this is really a story about human beings, when facing the worst, who brought out their best. And that, to me, is ultimately a very inspiring story.
It is such an inspiring story, and as we stated, it certainly could have been much, much worse. But the effects were felt for a very, very long time, weren't they?
They absolutely were, of course. You can't lose half your city and not feel that, of course. Individually, about 500 people were blinded from this. So the study of ophthalmology was greatly advanced during the Halifax explosion. And the practice of pediatric surgery was basically invented in Halifax when a guy named Dr. William Ladd from Boston comes up and spends a week or so helping out all these kids. He realizes that the surgery techniques for kids have got to be different than they are for adults, and that starts the first pediatric surgery clinic in Boston. Now, of course, every city's got one. But that was another great advance there. So the effects were felt for a long time physically. They're felt, of course, in the city for a long time, too. But the recovery effort with Boston helping out, even with new apartment buildings, with merchandise for they donated to people, baby carriages, beds, tables, chairs, you name it, the recovery effort was so rapid that just about a year and a half later, the city had been mostly rebuilt.
You look at this happening 100 years ago, and what I'm curious about is, as you mentioned of Oppenheimer and of studying this to estimate the effects of the bomb in Hiroshima, at what point did this become on the radar as far as something that could be used as a military tool?
That's a great question, Joe, and probably not until Oppenheimer got a hold of the idea. This, of course, was a pure accident in 1917 and a somewhat dumb one. The frustration with the captains, ship captains, will be as great as your admiration for the people who were covered for them, the average mom and pops and all that, taking care of people left and right. And I don't think that till Oppenheimer gets a hold of this, they realized how much damage a single bomb can do when concentrated, and second of all, how that will break the will of the people in war. What did happen in Halifax is they're sending soldiers. It is the gateway for all things going to the war. The soldiers from the U.S. and Canada and all over the world, actually, the materials, the bombs, the you name it, it all went through Halifax. But the war seems so far away. It's overseas and papers are slow and all that, so it did not feel very immediate. After this, it felt very immediate, and they had a much better sense of what the soldiers were going through on a daily basis. So what Oppenheimer figured out also is not just how to concentrate all power into one bomb, but also, sad to say, if you hit a civilian target, you're more likely to break the will of the people.
One of the aspects of the story, you have a chapter in the book called Small Gifts, and it was very striking to me about, the, you know, you forget this when you're reading it, but oh, right, this is Canada in the wintertime. So it's December 17th, and this happens. You have all of these people who are displaced. It is very, very cold. Not surprisingly, the people who are left homeless want to stay near Halifax. They're not moving elsewhere. So they're staying in their damaged homes. And the effort that comes out to just keep these people warm and start to rebuild is really incredible considering you're in the middle of winter.
Yeah, it was really, again, heartwarming. It sounds crazy, Joe, to say this is an inspiring story, but it is an inspiring story. It's all about hope and the better angels of our nature, to quote Abraham Lincoln. The restaurants in Halifax stayed open for a month and did not charge anybody. If you needed food, come on and get it. So many things were donated. Wood supplies, of course. Plywood is vital because your windows are smashed and you got a blizzard coming through. You need help. So plywood is often provided for free. Roofing supplies, left and right. A guy named Eaton, who started the big Eaton department stores in Canada, which are kind of their first Walmarts, he set up a shop in a train car. And if you had a note from your pastor or a like civic-minded person that you had suffered damage in this, you got everything you needed for free. And he set it up that way. And one condition that he got no credit, but I ruined that for him 100 years later by giving him credit. But the generosity was just incredible, both small and large.
So as we wrap up our conversation, let me end with this, which is asking you about what this did politically for the relationship between U.S. and Canada, because this really transformed the relationship between these two countries.
Once again, Joe, you've done your homework, and I was shocked to learn, my mom is Canadian, I'm an American, grew up in Michigan and still live there, that U.S. and Canada were not allies before this happened in 1917. We had fought against each other in 1776 and 1812. In the Civil War, they favored the Confederates because they wanted the cotton, unofficially. And also in 1911, the Speaker of the House, the Paul Ryan of his day, got on the U.S. Congress floor to advocate vociferously for the annexation of Canada. And he received loud cheers, not a crazy idea, but a very popular idea. This is 1911, not much more than 100 years ago. So 6 years later, this happens. So we're still essentially enemies, although officially allies in World War I, finally. And yet Boston looks past all that and provides unbelievably generous help. The help went from New York, Chicago, Battle Creek, Michigan, all over the United States to help out their neighbor who, again, was not really an ally to that point. So that turned U.S. and Canada into allies. A few years later, Canada opens an embassy in D.C. They had not had one beforehand. And they start driving on the American side of the road, the right side of the road, and not the British side of the road, the left, which they had done until 1924. How's that?
Well, that is a legacy. Absolutely. And in the process of the book, you learn a lot about your grandfather.
Yes, you do. It turns out, and I dedicated the book to my grandfather. Grandfather, you were not crazy. I know this now. So thanks for telling me this story.
The name of the book, The Great Halifax Explosion, a World War I story of treachery, tragedy, and extraordinary heroism. The book is published by William Morrow. John Bacon, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us today.
Joe, thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, The Great Halifax Explosion, published by Morrow. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.